go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Early apologies. I'm told by Brother Deacon Asa that all four horn channels are defaulted to the 8K stream. My apologies if the sound quality is not what you're used to. I got no control over that, and I have no idea why it happened. Maybe it'll resolve. Maybe there'll be a laying on of the healing hands of faith and whatnot. Right. So, that is what it is. This program is, of course, live. It is the 14th day of March 2017. And this is the horn. Titanic Tuesday. Absolutely. Titanic Tuesday being the day that we reserve for Titanic acts of right-wing intellect. Like saying, hey, there's an iceberg out there. Well, let's drive straight into it. Because freedom. Because conservatism. Because free market. Because Ayn Rand. Because liberty. Sit, liberty. Sit. The chat room is live. Folks are talking and carrying on. If you would like to be part of that conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. Just pop on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately met by a whole host of folks, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave, where it is 75 degrees, he informs us. 75 degrees in Northern California, and I'll have to pick up Gerald's slack because he's not here and say, shut it, Sparky. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's a delightful 56 degrees here in the studio. If you hear a little extraneous noise, that's probably the crunchiness of the external shell of my heavy winter coat. It's an off-brand from Dick's Sporting Goods called Köppen, because there's an umlaut over the U. It's Köppen, and I think it was made in Vietnam. Yeah, hear that? Yeah, that's heavy winter coat. Mm-hmm. We'll get through this, though. Can't feel my feet, but that's okay, too. It's only 3 hours, right? And I think we're going to have a good conversation this evening. There just aren't a whole bunch of nights when we don't have a good conversation. Mainly those are the nights when you guys make me just fill a bobster for 3 hours. This is a listener-supported broadcast operation, I might remind you. Last evening, I mentioned the fact that we had gotten a little bit out ahead of fundraising for the week, and then, well, contributions dried right up. So that means we actually are in the hole this evening. And not as bad a hole as we could be. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers. We were in a $245 hole this evening. So hopefully we'll clear that up. You know, one at 245. Oh, Jesus, it gets tough right off the bat, doesn't it? One at 245, two at 122.50. Oh, hell. Four at 61 and a quarter. And I'm just not going to go any further than that because I have enough headaches as it is. But it's also 10 at 24.50 or 24 and a half people at 10 bucks. The bottom line is we got to raise 245 bucks, you know, or more, because that's how we keep everything going here. If you want to help out, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And if you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okay? And if you want to do it that way, just shoot me a note and let me know, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne. Okay? Ah, thank you. Asa says the 48 kbps stream is up and running now, and our buddy Soapbox Geezer, otherwise known as Keith, says, tune in here is on 48K. Sounds good. And Robert letting me know, sounds fine in Oz. Good. That's one less thing to worry about. We don't have any buffering. We don't have any nastiness, hatefulness, none of that stuff. And so, hot damn, let's roll. Because it is Titanic Tuesday. And, of course, the name for Titanic Tuesday comes from something that now happened many years ago, when our buddy Jim heard something on right-wing radio in which the world's most hypnotic monotone took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who asked, Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean. To which he replied monotonously, thereby potentially putting at hazard lots of weary travelers on the highways and byways there near Beckley, West Virginia. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes, 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 indeed. No word on the movement of the Titanic garlic baker. One of these days, somebody's going to have to take on a project of just coming up with all the stuff that's on the Titanic table. But that's what Titanic Tuesday is all about. And we've got our fair share. We do. We really, really do. But I want to revisit something from last night, if I may, please. I know there's health care to talk about. There's all kinds of mean-spirited, right-wing, pig-licking viciousness and sadism. And if you are a listener to a lot of different progressive radio programs, you probably know about most of them. But I want to go back to this business with Steve King. Some of you might say that I'm giving him too much free publicity. But when you've got, you know, when you've got Nazis and racists and bigots and the like, it's best to call them out for what they are. And I am not alone in this regard. All of this goes back, as we were talking about last night, to a statement he made on Twitter, to wit, we can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. We can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. One, this presumes that civilization needs restoring, which is right up there with, we're going to take our country back, which they only started saying when there was a black guy in the White House. And is, as is the case in Western Europe, where Geert Wilders and Nigel Farage and Marine Le Pen and the various and sundry other fascist goose-stepping goddamn weirdos hold sway, they're only saying it because there are some Muslims in their country. And they're afraid that they're going to get overrun by the Sultan's hordes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, David Duke got all damp in his maiden forms and wrote in all caps, God bless Steve King. You remember David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan? Yes. You know, it's interesting. There has not been a word out of Steve King's office saying, David Duke needs to suck a bag of dicks. And we disavow his endorsement. We disavow him. We disavow him breathing air on planet Earth. We want nothing to do with David Duke. No, because, of course, David Duke and Steve King are fellow travelers. Mm-hmm. But another organization has entered the fray. And this actually sort of, kind of, one hopes, means something. Granted, Des Moines, Iowa is not part of that corner of Iowegia that is represented by Steve King. No, assholes from a different part of Iowa send Steve King to the Congress. And I'm going to stand by that assessment until such time as I'm proven wrong. If you and I think it may even qualify. Did I do the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part yet? I don't think I did. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm going to stay. I think this might even qualify as a political maxim, or maybe even a political law. To wit, if you notice that there is an asshole in government who is an elected asshole, then you must presume that that asshole was sent to be an asshole in the Congress by a lot of other assholes. Okay? There is no way that normal, decent people go out and vote for Steve King. That's something that only assholes do. And without using the word asshole, the Des Moines Register seems to begin to have that light dawn upon them. They wrote an editorial. No, the Des Moines Register did. And they said, if Steve King was your average garden variety bigot. Oh, we have an endorsement coming from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. I'm Carol Baker, former Iowegian, and I approve this message. Okay. It, because, you know, one hates to admit that there are lots of assholes in America. Yeah, but there are. I mean, I live in West Virginia, the Trumpiest state in the Union. One must come to grips that when one sends an asshole to the White House, that, or when an asshole is sent to the White House, it took a lot of assholes to send him there. This really does. This is beginning to. I don't know. Is it going to show up on? Is 3 months from now? Is it going to show up on Bill Maher or Saturday Night Live or? I don't know. Meet the Press or. Hi, little lurking horn listeners. Hi, glad to have you aboard. Love to hear from you sometime. Really would. But the Des Moines Register seems to be on board. in what is described as a scathing editorial. The editorial board of the Des Moines Register wrote, "If Steve King was your average garden variety bigot and was standing on a street corner while spouting his nonsense to passers-by, he'd be easy to ignore. Everyone could dismiss his rants as undeserving of their attention and get on with their day," they write. Unfortunately, King has a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. He's a federal lawmaker. He's on the public payroll. When he speaks, he represents, literally and figuratively, the people of Iowa. King's words are predictable, but they carry weight only because he is a congressman. And he's a congressman because after Republican Party leaders repeatedly denounce his words in an attempt to claim the moral high ground, they then wallow in the mud by supporting King's bids for re-election. If King's worldview truly doesn't match that of the Republican Party, then party leaders at both state and national level need to stand together in supporting an opposing candidate in the 2018 Republican primary. Given King's long-standing record as one of the least effective members of Congress, the GOP should have no difficulty finding a more thoughtful and qualified individual to represent the people of Iowa's 4th District. Here's the problem. There are apparently a large number of assholes in the 4th Congressional District of Iowa. This is not, I think we've got listeners in the 4th Congressional District of Iowa. I am not saying that they are assholes, because I'm pretty sure they don't run out and vote for Steve King. Steve Cantaloupes King. But a sufficient number of assholes do. And in a primary in the 4th Congressional District of Iowa, a Republican primary in 2018, what the Des Moines Register is suggesting is that there are actually Republicans in the 4th Congressional District in Iowa who aren't assholes. And I do not believe that there is a sufficient quantum of data with which to support that hypothesis. In a way, it's the exact opposite of the problem we have with Joe Manchin here in West Virginia. As I've told you before, I am committed, maybe because I'm an asshole. I like to think it's because I'm not. I'm committed to voting for whatever, whomever, weird, bizarre, fetish fetishizing, gun fondling, racist, Klansman, neo-Nazi, xenophobe, bigot, misogynist the Republican Party puts up to run against Joe Manchin, because that is the only way to get rid of Joe Manchin. And then you start working on getting rid of the aforementioned asshole 6 years later. And in sort of mirror image, the same applies in the 4th District of Iowa. If you want rid of Steve King, if people in the 4th District want rid of Steve King, the answer is not going to be to find another Republican, because, hint, that guy is probably also going to be an asshole. He has to be ousted by a member of the opposite party. Because, among other things, as a result of the gerrymandering of the districts and probably the political power that Steve King wields, he can just get two or three or four ringers to join in the primary against the alleged non-asshole, and the next thing you know, he's in the general election again. A little bit of demographic data for the 4th Congressional District of Iowa, courtesy of Carol Baker. Current Representative Steve King, R. Chiron, distribution, 50.58% urban, 49.42% rural. Population in the year 2000, 585,305. Median income, $38,242. Ethnicity, 95.8% white, 0.8% black, 1.1% Asian, 2.5% Hispanic, and 0.2% Native American. Carroll adds, urban is a misnomer in Iowa. So it's going to fall to, and I'm not trying to discount anybody's vote, it's going to fall to non-asshole white people to do something about the likes of Steve King. With an email, subject line, re-assholes. Scott and Punky write, that's all well and good, but I still want to know how many holes does it take to fill the Albert Hall. As for assholes generally, we're all one, really, and about the best any of us can do is to work toward being a recovering asshole on a daily basis. Well, there are those who are, and there are those who are trying not to be. I had a little moment today. I went up to the Rippy Mart. Didn't want to be caught out without gasoline in the vehicle in case we have another great rickety coal-fired antiquated power grid power outage during, and so far it's not much of a blizzard, but it's a pain. It's colder than hell, and I sort of predicted this. Not that it took a lot of talent. After February, you just knew the other shoe had to drop. 80-degree Februaries in Appalachia do not come without consequences. So up to the Rippy Mart I went, where an older gentleman who was quite friendly and trying real hard and brand new at his job was, and you know, cash registers are complicated things now. And he was checking me out, and he was going through all the steps, and I was being patient. And this codger is another word for asshole, came in. It was cold outside. And he said, turn my damn pump on! And he said, I've already turned your pump on. You're on three. And he said, well, I don't know. And he goes back out, and I look out the window, and I say, no, he's not on pump three. He's on pump two. After a while, he comes back in, and we're still finishing the transaction. And he says, the hell with it. I'll just be moving on. I ain't got all day for this kind of business, and it's cold outside. About that time, I completed my transaction. Anybody ever work in a convenience store? It is not fun work. And it is low-paying work. And that man would not be doing that job if he did not need what little pissant pay that place offers. And I'm standing there, and I'm going, hey, you're doing fine. He's like, I'm sorry it's taking so long. And I said, you're doing fine. This is a learning process. You'll be okay. Because the transaction took a little bit longer. But God Almighty, he was trying to work, and he damn sure had a reason to be working, or else he wouldn't have been there. I mean, it's really not that hard to not be an asshole. And so as I walked outside back to the vehicle, the old codger slash asshole was still out there being angry. And, of course, I remind you, this is a no permit for concealed carry state, so anything you say can and may be used against you by a guy with a gun in his pocket. But he was still pissing and moaning. And I don't know what got under my skin, but I just looked over to him and I said, "You know, buddy, a little patience and common human decency goes a long way in this world. You might want to try it someday." "What'd you say to me?" I said, "You heard me." And I got in my car and drove away. And of course, when you get in your car and you drive away, you're always thinking about the things you should have said. Because it would have been very easy to say, "I'll bet you voted for Trump, didn't you, you jackass?" Because I'll give you almost 99-1 odds that he did. Just cranky as hell in his privilege. And expecting everybody to jump too and step on it. Because it's cold outside and he's special. Talk about a special snowflake. They were flying all around him and he was one too. Yeah, exactly, Carol points out. "You mean that there Rippy Mart worker wasn't living the dream?" Kind of hard to live the dream when you're working at the Rippy Mart. As for my remarks on getting shed of Joe Manchin, and the mirror image version, getting shit of Steve King. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve in New York, says, "There's more than one way to skin a cat. The Democratic Party in West Virginia won't get rid of Manchin. The only way, then, to do that is to vote for the GOP candidate. The deal is, in this case, as you know, the GOP will be no different than the Republican. I mean, Democrat Manchin. Anyway, we have a cat to skin. We need to skin that cat post-haste. Then we get another cat. Because the cat keeps killing other cats you try to buy. Well, you know, if a cat's rabid, then you get the idea." From the Department of, Scott with another note. "Weather-wise, it's 76 degrees under mostly sunny skies here just east of downtown Oz, and Punky the Cockatiel is enjoying one of our world-famous organically grown snow cones with birdseed sprinkles," signed Scott in San Diego, and the aforementioned cool and refreshed Punky. I'll have to step in for Gerald again and say, "Shut it, Scott." So we're all even. But this is... Be patient with me. Because this is a little game called... Let's play around inside Bob's skull. Because it was that you can't revitalize civilization with somebody else's babies remark that just grated on me hour by hour last night and into this morning. The first thing I started thinking about was Steve King is constantly worried about the precious little fetuses. But we now know apparently he is only worried about the little white fetuses. Two, revitalize. We talked about that. And then civilization. And in the CNN clip we had last night, He talked about the wonder-working, miraculous powers of Western European civilization. And the more I mulled about it, and you know, he's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian. And I took to thinking about all the Christian contributions to civilization. And then I thought about the fact that Chris Cuomo pointed out to Steve King that Steve King is of German heritage. And then the fact that I mentioned last night that I, too, have some German background. Maybe it's why when we went on a warm day in May to an old abandoned quarry that had been turned into a little swimming hole, and there were all kinds of German families all around me and little kids running around in various states of undress because they're toddlers, and the Germans just don't get worked up about that. And it was the first time I'd ever been anywhere in my life that by the time I was down to my swimming trunks and no shirt on, that I was not the whitest person there. You could make an argument that from the shirt sleeves down, I was downright dark. My God, it was an entire artificial beach full of glow-in-the-dark human beings. And I mean, it was a weird sensation. I have grown up in a polyglot culture, where everybody doesn't have to look like everybody else, and everybody doesn't necessarily. I mean, I got laughed at growing up because, and you know, I was joked at for the fact, well, you know, don't worry about Bob. Bob can't get a suntan, but he gets a mean moon tan. That was a joke. And I couldn't stay out in this, under the sun at the swimming pool for very long, or else my entire being would hoove up in blisters that would then burst and then peel, and then I'd be even whiter underneath all over again. Have to put on SPF Avogadro's goddamn number just to reach under the refrigerator bulb to go deep in the refrigerator for that last little bit of mayo in the Hellman's jar. But there's some, but I got to thinking about the fact, you know, there's some German in me. And the German that's in me were a bunch of people who kind of had to leave Germany on the quick because they were getting the living bejesus persecuted out of them by the Lutherans and the Catholics. They were called Anabaptists. For those of you who are big fans of Joseph Heller's Catch-22, you might be reminded of A.D. Tapman Chaplin, who, when Yossarian would refer to him father, would say, "Oh, you don't have to call me father. I'm only an Anabaptist." Well, the Anabaptists had the living bejesus killed out of them. And I got, and again, like I said, I got to thinking back to my time over there, which hopefully I will never forget. I'd love to have more time over there sometime. I'd like to see something I didn't see. Because on the day that I got there, and after we'd had the big bank meeting, and I'd replaced all the medicine that had been stolen from me by that little bastard in Belgium, We took a train from Frankfurt to Münster, and from Münster we went by car to the little village that was the headquarters of the environmental group with whom I was staying. But in going through Münster, I saw an absolutely lovely sight. It was the end of term. And all the college students there at the University of Münster or whatever it was were out at near midnight bicycling around and having a wonderful time. And the ice cream shops had stayed open late, and they were congregated around the ice cream shops having ice creams, and and talking and playing. And I was thinking, you know, if that was beer, it might be Morgantown. But I also knew, because I was not completely asleep during that College World History class, I was only resting my eyes, that there was some pretty significant stuff that took place in Münster, not the least of which was part of the Peace of Westphalia, which also was part, took place in Osnabrück. But then, because I was also thinking about Steve King, I thought about something else. In particular, a little something that happened in 1534. And again, this is just an exercise in how my mind works. It was 1534 when, after the Protestant Reformation, and after the Lutherans had successfully fended off the homicidal urges, in large part, of the Roman Catholic Church to just kill the shit out of them. Heretic! Burn the heretic! Well, everybody didn't necessarily agree with Martin Luther's view of worship. And so other sects developed, including the group that would go on to become Anabaptists. And Anabaptist means to baptize again. In other words, they felt like dribbling a little bit of water on a baby's head really didn't count towards salvation. That you had to make a conscious adult decision. And yeah, this could sort of verge over into Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but it doesn't. There's a larger point here that goes back to Steve King and his titanic intellect. And so a fervor toward freedom, actually, began sweeping through the Low Countries, up from Switzerland, into southern Germany, into central Germany, and it finally reached Münster. And in Münster, there was a group of people, Bernhard Nipperdoling, Melchior Hoffman. He initiated the adult baptism stuff. Bernhard Rothmann, Jan Buckelson, who would later become known as Jan van Leiden. And they took over city government with the idea that they were going to break free of the strictures of the church, and that they were going to hold all things in common, just like St. Paul said in his letters and his descriptions of the early church, and they were going to warehouse everything. And they were going to, and they were going, they, basically, they were going to engage in 16th century communism. In other words, they were going to live communally. Because they got this radical notion that the Bible, and in particular the New Testament, demanded that all people, men, okay, there's still that little gender problem, but that all men be treated equally. Not the least of which being the matter of how wealth was distributed. There were pamphlets about it all over the place. And eventually the Anabaptists came into control of Münster. At which point people came from all over Europe to see the magnificent, you know, experiment take place. And that included
Jan Bokelson from the Low Countries, who became known as John of Leiden. Along the way, they also threw out the Catholic bishop, because at that point he began to seem somewhat superfluous. His name was Franz von Waldeck. And Bishop Franz von Waldeck did not take kindly to this, so he in turn raised an army and drew lots of faithful to him who joined in a siege of Münster. And the leader at the time was the guy I mentioned earlier, Jan Matthys. And on Easter Sunday of 1534, Jan Matthys thought himself a bit of a prophet and took 30 of his followers with him outside the gates of Münster to declare the coming of God's judgment, at which point in time Franz von Waldeck's followers chopped him into tiny pieces, and all of his followers as well. And then they took his severed head and put it on a pole so that everybody in the city of Münster could see, and they took his penis and his balls and nailed them to the city gate in the name of Jesus. This story really is going somewhere. Leadership then devolved onto the guy I mentioned earlier, John of Leiden. And it didn't take long for them to go absolutely nuts. They didn't have much in the way of food. They were under siege. And yet the leadership were living like princes. You know, somehow it always happens like that. And at one point, eventually, John of Leiden declared himself the successor of King David of Israel. Found a few ermine robes laying about, cloaked himself with them, and gave himself absolute power in what he called the New Zion. Herein we have the trouble of adopting somebody else's cultural traditions and you know, just sort of co-opting them as one's own. Long about then, he also declared, because there were a whole lot more women in Münster than men, that it was the duty of men to marry a whole bunch of women. Now, of course, this probably went over great with the guys, not so much maybe with the women. And he took Jan Matthys' wife as his own, and apparently she wasn't too keen on the idea, at which time he lopped her head off. It's not like Joseph Smith invented anything, okay? And not too long afterward, on June the 24th, 1535, the besieging forces overran Münster, captured John of Leiden and the other ringleaders, and hung them in cages suspended from St. Lambert's Church. They were tortured for a while, and then in the name of Jesus, they were killed. And then they stuffed their bodies in the cages and left them hanging from the steeple at St. Lambert's. Later on, they took the bones out after there was nothing but bones. But to this day, if you visit St. Lambert's Church in Münster, the cages are still hanging. Now, this did a number on the Anabaptists. They realized that doing violence and lopping on it. And you know who they turned into? They turned into the Amish and the Mennonites. But they were still persecuted. And I'm pretty sure that my German forebears, who I can see in the records as moving around Germany a little bit, were part of that. And then when they finally got the chance in the early 18th century, they got the right out and got on a boat to come over to Penn's Woods, Pennsylvania, where there was a great experiment underway of religious tolerance. In other words, they had to flee all that civilization that Steve King is so keen on. There is nothing new and nothing redeeming in the Western civilization that Steve King says he so reveres. And in point of fact, there's probably an argument to be made that somewhere along the way, some of his people had pretty much about as much of that civilization as they could stand to, or else they would not have come here. Given that he's an Iowegian, he may trace his roots back to all the Germans who got right the hell out of there following the Revolution of 1848. When you see the growth of progressive German communities in Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, and a flourishing of democracy movements that Steve King now despises. And the folks that the Lutherans and the Catholics came in and slaughtered were the same color as them. They weren't even Muslims. But they were still enough different to be deemed heretics and worthy of torture and murder. So Steve King can take his much vaunted Western civilization and you can't restore it with somebody else's babies and stick it where the sun don't shine, because he may not know any goddamn history, but I goddamn sure do. And now you do too. And now you know the rest of the story. Because the fact of the matter is, every civilization has always been restored and revitalized and perpetuated with somebody else's babies. God damn him. But the Des Moines Register, as much as they didn't want to admit it, may be onto something. If King's worldview truly doesn't match that of the Republican Party, then party leaders at both the state and national level need to stand together in supporting an opposing candidate. Republican Party leaders repeatedly denounce his words in an attempt to claim the moral high ground, then they wallow in the mud by supporting his bids for re-election. Is that Western civilization that he wants to revitalize, the part with the people's corpses hanging in cages from a church steeple? Is that really it? Is a civilization defined by its skin color? Or is a civilization defined by its ability to do the absolute best it can by every member of it? I would submit that the answer is the latter. And I wondered who would pick that up. John of Leiden. Because, well, in the world that is ruled by the goddess of irony, history doesn't repeat itself, but it damn sure rhymes. Michael in Madison writes, John of Leiden? You mean Johnny Rotten? Yeah. And then there's more than a passing similarity. Because the punk movement of which he was such a seminal part, it was every bit as iconoclastic as those Anabaptists were in 1534. And while they didn't murder him and torture him and hang him in a cage from a steeple, John Lydon, otherwise known as Johnny Rotten, was reviled in his own right. Ain't history just so cool? There are so many lessons to be learned, so many conclusions to be drawn. We have little tiny short lives. And unless we unless we make a conscious effort to learn, we'll just wander along wondering what in the hell, why are we in this hand car and where are we going? By the way, John Lydon is a pacifist. After they learned their lesson at Munster, the Anabaptists also became among the most famous pacifists in the world, particularly in the United States, where the Mennonites and the Amish will swear no oath, participate in no civil governance, except this past election when the Amish ran out to vote for, Trump. Yeah. And there's more than a little historical rhyming going on. So I just felt like maybe there would be some benefit in going back to Steve King and understanding him in a broader context. And so here we are at the end of the filibobster. Like I said, there's plenty of titanic intellect to celebrate. In the coming 2 hours, if you've got a nomination or an example, then jump right into the conversation. 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, which works for some and not for others, 304-663-4676. From anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, on Skype, email, yeah. Gerald pointing out, who has made it into the room after me having to pick up his slack with a couple of shut-its, says, Bob, if I sit in a certain spot in the corner, the microwave can't see me writing in my journal that I hide in a spot on the wall. Let's see how many people get the reference. Send it in quick as you do. And thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly for getting us started on fundraising this evening. I'm happy to announce we are now down to only $225 to go, and that makes a big deal in bill paying because we have bill paying yet to do. So, yeah, a little break, and it being a Tuesday and everything, we have the Green News Report coming your way. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Right you were, Michael and Madison, and you read my mind. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Could be wrong. It's Tuesday, March 14, 2017.
So no, I would not agree that it's a primary contributor to the global warming that we see.
EPA chief peddles disproven claims on climate change. Disinformation works, poll finds. Elon Musk offers to upgrade Australia's electric grid. Plus,
it's a good day to stay home. In any case, it is going to be a dangerous, dangerous situation.
From extreme warmth to extreme snow, extreme weather wallops the Northeast.
All of those extremes and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
But maybe Pruitt's right. Maybe CO2 isn't the number one cause of global warming. Maybe the cause of the warming is the head of the EPA blowing smoke up the oil industry's ass.
Colbert said it, not me. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, along with everything else, it seems that the climate, at least in these United States, has gone mad.
Yeah, kind of. It's extreme warmth and then extreme snow. Just days after unseasonably hot temperatures in the northeastern U.S., now a late season blizzard for the region that forecasters say could be a record breaker. Here's New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
16 to 20 inches of snow expected. High end could be as much as 24 inches, which would therefore put this in the category of one of the biggest snowstorms in recent memory.
And mind you, this is happening in March. Officials are taking precautions, but note that people can adjust to these extremes. However, plants, trees, and animals that were fooled by the early onset of spring temperatures will be walloped by this surprise blizzard. Climate scientists have predicted for decades that we'd see a trend toward more extreme swings in weather events.
You know who else will be fooled? Fox News, because as soon as it starts snowing outside their studios, they will declare once again, see, climate change is a hoax. It's snowing.
Now, if February 2017 seemed unusually warm in the U.S. to you, you're right. February 2017 was the second hottest February on record for the United States, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Second only to last February 2016. February 2017 was more than 7 degrees Fahrenheit above normal and helped to trigger massive early season wildfires in the Plains states. And note that there was no El Nino this time to goose temperatures. Data for the whole planet is due out soon. Meanwhile, the American Meteorological Society has rebuked the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt after he falsely denied that carbon dioxide is the primary driver of global warming on CNBC.
No, I think that measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact. So no, I would not agree that it's a primary contributor to the global warming that we see.
Now, in reality, Pruitt knows that the global scientific community has confirmed CO2 emissions as the primary driver of global warming. The American Meteorological Society criticized Pruitt in a statement saying, quote, "We are not familiar with any scientific institution with relevant subject matter expertise that has reached a different conclusion."
And that's the man who now heads the Environmental Protection Agency. Just had to underscore that.
And a new poll from Yale University indicates that such disinformation has succeeded in confusing a majority of Americans about climate change.
Americans are easily confused, though.
The poll found that two-thirds of Americans do not know that 97% of climate science.
Oh, that was certainly interesting. I'll be back to the chat room in a minute and all kinds of stuff. The production computer just decided to take a powder, which sort of sucks, being how it had a whole bunch of the stories I'd hoped to get to on it. Okay. That was certainly bizarre. By the way, awards going out to Robert in Australia and the Angry Indian for getting awards. Yeah, okay. Awards.
And there it is, for getting Gerald's 1984 reference. Well done. Well done, Angry Indian, and well done, Robert in Australia. And they both came in at almost the same time. So we've got that going on, too. Okay, do I need to restart? Yeah, these periodic just crashes are beginning to become... What's the word I'm looking for here? Oh, yeah. Annoying as hell. And, yes, you could say that toward the... when they got to the polygamy part, and I mean, there's stories, you know, John of Leiden running around naked in the streets, and you could say they went fucking crazy. Literally. Yes. But that is nowhere near the be-all nor the end-all of this particular Titanic Tuesday. Oh, no. Not even a little bit. It's just a matter of recovering some stuff real quick. That's why we have a backup computer. When it works. The latest, you know, the numbers came out, and I know we're talking a lot about healthcare, and I think it's appropriate so to do. There was a shouting match over on The View today. Are you out there, Juanita? Hi, Juanita. For a long time, Juanita would take one for the team and would watch The View and report on it so we didn't have to. But there was a shouting match on The View today between Jedediah Bila, who talked about how the free market will fix the healthcare problem. Jesus. An utterly discredited, miserable fraud of an economic idea. And they still get a platform. I guess because we have to have, there always has to be a duality. So so over on The View, there was a shouting match today over healthcare and over how many people would lose coverage and how many people wouldn't. And the word that has gone out in the wake of the CBO scoring of the... And by the way, I give credit where credit is due. Joy Behar came up with the best way of referring to this new sadistic bill. I've said we need to call it GOP care. A lot of people insist on calling it Trump care, even though he had absolutely nothing to do with it. This is the long con, the sticky wet dream of right wing conservatism over the course of years and years and years and years. So I've argued GOP care or Ryan care because a lot of it is, you know, him. Joy Behar nailed it. She calls it Tryan care. T-R-Y-A-N. Trump and Ryan. Tryan care. So I think I'm going to, with credit given, I'm going to hang on to that because it seems to encapsulate it oh so well. But the talking points have gone out, and the talking point, and you know, Sean Spicer got into this, and Jedediah Bila, who is not a guy, maybe she's got a sister named Zebedee, promulgated the idea earlier today. And that is, well, you know, you can't trust the CBO because, well, back when Obamacare was announced, they said 24 million people would use the exchanges to get insurance, and it weren't but 10, as if 10 million people is some sort of insignificant number. Right. But that begs another question. Why was it only 10? Well, part of the reason it was only 10 is because of the massive resistance of the Confederacy and a few other and a handful of few other states to not participate in the exchanges and refusal to set up their own exchanges and therefore overloading the federal exchange system. And then there were the lawsuits about whether or not the federal exchanges and the subsidies that came from them were actually constitutional, which it turns out they were. And then there's the number of people who got insurance through the Medicaid expansion, which operated exactly as it was supposed to in states that decided to take all the free money because it covered up to 100. And you know, this is this we probably aren't talking about it this way, but I'm pretty sure that in 100 years' time it will be talked about this way, that the Medicaid expansion was the great tragic loss in the whole health care insurance fiasco. Because had there been but a responsible body in charge of the Congress, the 137% number that's the threshold for Medicaid expansion could have been raised to 150, 165, 187.5, 200% of the poverty level. And that's still not a whole lot of money, but it would have brought more people into what is essentially a federal single-payer system. And once people have health care, they don't want to lose it. But it's almost as if Medicaid goes begging and Medicaid gets ignored, except for the fact that it's seen as what it was before, a safety net for the very poorest of the poor. Well, it isn't that anymore. Not with the expansion, it isn't. I mean, 137% of the poverty level for a family of four, mom and mom and two kids, or dad and two kids, or mom and dad and two kids, that number gets up up into the $30,000 range, which of course is way more than mom and mom or dad and dad or mom and dad earn if they're both getting as many hours as they possibly can working minimum wage at Walmart or at the Rippy Mart or any of these other good paying jobs that proliferate across the American economy. You could have seen tens upon tens of millions of people insured under the Medicaid expansion, which eventually would have led, if we ever get one, would have led a responsible Congress to say, you know what? The handwriting's on the wall. Let's just go to Medicare for all and have done. And we'll leave a loophole for the assholes. And the assholes can pay for for-profit insurance that's not going to be anywhere near as good as what they get in the universal coverage they get through the Medicaid expansion or Medicare for all, and they're free to pay for that. And you know, the insurance industry could craft policies for the fetus fetishists who want to make sure that the women folk and their families don't have coverage for a abortion if one is necessary, even to save mommy's life. I mean, they can have some real freedom, free market, capitalist, anarcho-Randian insurance if they're stupid enough to buy it. Right? But that didn't get mentioned in this shouting fest over on The View. And of course, once again, the thing, and I'm going to keep harping on it until somebody starts talking about it, and some few are, but not many. And you just, you wish there was some way to reach out to these people and say, listen, you're missing the point. You're talking about, do we keep the ACA or do we let the Republicans get their marquee to sod on, when the answer is a hell of a lot simpler than that? The answer is universal single payer. The answer is Medicare for all. And let's do that and stop having to have these conversations. But of course, the Republicans have to have these conversations because they have to have things to which they can lie to the about which they can lie to the American people and get away with it because they don't get called on it. And I'm going right to the phones in a minute, but one more thing. When you say to a Republican, yeah, but what about the 40,000 people who will die every year? You know what you get, right? You get, well, it couldn't possibly be that. Couldn't possibly be that many people. Well, yeah, it could. Ian Milheiser, writing at Think Progress, says, here's how many people could die if Trump care becomes law. If an army did this, we would call it an atrocity. In 2018 alone, approximately 17,000 people could die, he writes, who otherwise would have lived if a House Republican health proposal endorsed by the Trump administration becomes law. Within 8 years of 2018, the number of people killed by Trump care, try and care, could grow to approximately 29,000 people in 2026 alone. So you have to reach anybody who's voting for this, anybody who's in favor of this, is in favor of killing, in 2018, 17,000 people. Is roughly the entire population of McDowell County, West Virginia. Is more people than live in the county seat of my county. It's way more than live in my little town on this side of the river. It is if you would drive through and there would be nothing but empty buildings. Like some disease had swept through and simply wiped everyone out. That's what it means to not have insurance. I know this personally, all the way down to my goddamn toenails. It's real for me. It's real for millions of Americans. And so if you were to confront, and it'll never happen, mind you, if you were to confront a Republican and say, what about the 17,000 people that'll die? Well, I don't think it's really 17,000. Well, okay, so what if it's 50% of that? What if it's 8,500 people? Well, maybe it's okay. What if it's 100 people? Sooner or later, Congressman Thumbbutt, you're gonna have to admit that it's okay with you in the name of freedom and free markets and capitalism. You're gonna have to admit it is okay for your fellow Americans to die. And for them to die for your weird, sick, twisted political philosophy. That's the reality at work here. That's what this all means. That's where we're headed. There is a small army of conservative Republicans, and they are coming for people you know. They may be coming for you yourself. They mean to kill you. And I reiterate what I have said before. Apart from the ballot box, we are foreclosed from defending ourselves against them. Yeah. Let's go over and talk to Todd in the South Carolina stand. Hey, Todd. Oh, Todd. There you are.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, I got you.
Listen, you're hitting it out of the park tonight. You just hit a chord, you know, between Steve King and the health insurance. And see, in my mind, they're very much related. You know, it's a lot of evil going on. These people are just evil. Okay?
Yeah, it's hard. I don't like to throw that word around, but it's hard to avoid that word.
Well, if you select out all the other variables, like what would determine their behavior, you select out everything else, that's all you're left with. You know, different spectrums of evil. And race is evil, just evil, evil. You know, Steve King, excuse me, Steve King, I want to know why he cannot be censured. He needs to be censured by his peers because
the Democrats called for Steve King to be removed from his committee chairmanship of the Constitutional Subcommittee, and of course because he has a spine made of not quite firmed up Jell-O, Paul Ryan said, "What? Huh? No."
I mean, he's making no bones about it. It's not like this is new behavior, verbal behavior for him.
And no, this is Steve King being Steve King.
Yeah, and, he might think that's funny, or maybe that's the way he really thinks. I don't know, but it's very offensive, and someone in his position does not need to be operating like that. That's just absolutely unacceptable. You wouldn't accept that shit from a chief of police or any other civil servant locally. Because this is what got me. When he said, oh, no, he was interviewed. He said, no, I meant what I said. You know, as if to say, ask me some more questions, motherfucker, and I'll tell you how goddamn racist I am. That's what the fuck I got out of it. Maybe I'm sensitive because I'm a black person, you know.
No, I don't think. I don't think you're. I don't think that's you being sensitive.
No. And then you have these other folks who just don't get it, and you know we're saying, look, we're going down this racist road again quickly, and they're like, no, everything's fine. No, it's not. It's not. And all this evil shit is related. All this shit is related because Paul Ryan, why is he so excited about knowing and being in control, maybe, of watching people die or suffer a slow death?
Did you ever read Atlas Shrugged?
Yes, right. Exactly.
No, I mean, I'm in earnest. Did you ever read cover to cover, front to back, Atlas Shrugged?
I've never read it. Honestly, I've never read it front to back. I've read portions of it, and I was just like, I'm not going to engage. No, I'm just not going to spend that much time.
Okay, let's imagine, Todd, you're white and 15 years old. Your daddy has just kicked the bucket. You've got enough wealth privilege that you're going to be okay, but mama still makes sure that you get those Social Security survivor benefits. And maybe one Saturday down at the bookstore, because it's got some nifty looking cover, you pick up this paperback doorstop by Ayn Rand called Atlas Shrugged. And maybe, because you're a teenager and And you're relying on what is referred to as a government handout to keep your sorry white ass alive. Maybe you sit down and you read that thing from beginning to end. I have, twice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all that talk in the book about takers and moochers.
Yep.
And there you are, and you're a teenage taker and a teenage moocher. And you promise to yourself that you're gonna kiss up and kick down on the ladder of life. And you use those Social Security dependent benefits to get your ass all the way through some crummy little college. And then your ambition kicks in. You never work an honest day in your life, but you find yourself some way to make money off the government tit. All the while telling yourself that you, by God, believe in the free market and the dynamic principles of Ayn Rand's objectivism.
Preach it, Bob. See, that's what gets me about that guy. He, like you,
and so,
you
and so, you know, so he
he's
wears
been
it
on the government milk from the government teat his whole life.
Period. Right. But he wears that Ayn Rand bullshit as a sort of ideological condom over the moocher and taker, as she refers to people such as him, that he was and is. I mean, the only real job dude ever held, I think he said he drove the Oscar Mayer weenie mobile for a summer.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked as a waiter at a little Tex-Mex joint a block down from the congressional office buildings called, why can't I remember it now? I've been there a million times. They got great chips and salt.
So he's always had privilege and access.
Yeah.
So. And I'm just curious, now that you brought it up, I wonder when he did pick that book up. I wonder if it was in college or I don't know.
Generally, the people who are most deeply influenced by that tripe, and it is, it's tripe.
Mm-hmm.
As Truman Capote said of Jack Kerouac, that's not writing, that's typing. the people who are most profoundly influenced by it are the ones who pick it up as teenagers.
Yeah.
I don't know that to be a fact in his case, but yeah. Because
well, you know,
if you
like
grow up and you go back and you read it, you go, this is a bunch of bilious crap.
Right. But, you know, like you're saying, somebody in his position, his father died, and, you know, he, some people just are like that. You know, some people like, you know, at that age, they want to read things like Hunter Thompson or Claude Lewis, you know, just anything, you know, different things, science fiction, that's kind of science fiction. But yeah, she was, and it's funny, wait a minute, and they're both hypocritical. Not only Ayn Rand, but he is also. How about that?
Comes with the territory.
Remember, in her waning days, right, she was on the government teat also.
Sure.
And he started out on the government teat, and he's still on the government teat, and he's like, oh, I got mine. But, yeah, so, you know, these people really engage in projection and hypocrisy at a very high and sophisticated level, and it's disgusting. And, I'm glad you, I don't know, I've heard you say it twice over the course of a couple of weeks in terms of, this is a wake-up call in terms of the healthcare, like, this is a lesson. This is exactly why we should just have universal coverage. You know, I don't like the term single payer for some reason, but everyone should be covered. And guess what? Then we can move on to more pressing issues like the economy. Because for some reason, the economy will get better if we just...
Well, no, that's the thing. You take care of the healthcare issue, and the economy will immediately receive a benefit. One of the things that you hear, Todd... right-wingers pissing, moaning about us. Well, this is so hard on our precious free market small business people. Because if they get, they want to grow their business, but if they have more than 50 employees, they got to give them health care. Give them my ass. The employees pay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the employer pays everybody as well, pays. And it's an investment exactly. in having a well workforce. But let's leave that to one side for a moment. If you have everybody simply covered, then no precious small business person ever has to worry about health care again.
Exactly. And small businesses are, that is one wonderful facet of the American economy, small businesses, because they have, a lot of times they hire local people. A lot of people get their start. They get groomed in small businesses. Small businesses are great, and it would take that burden off of them. Not to mention it's the right thing to do. In addition, we don't live in a bubble. We do not live in a bubble. So these folks can live in gated communities all they want, you know, get in the garage, open the door, you know, drive out, garage goes down, go through the gate, you know, go into the market. But guess what? When you go to the market, you're going to be around somebody, and they might have TB, and they might not have health insurance, and they might cough on you, and you might get TB because you didn't want to do the right thing. And you love that dollar hamburger, don't you? Yeah, but guess what? That person making that burger, they might not be able to miss a day of work. And nobody's checking.
You don't really think our bettors go to McDonald's, do you?
Oh, the president does.
I thought he went to KFC.
Well, he probably does, yeah. It was KFC, wasn't it?
Where they're featuring Georgia Gold barbecue sauce. Send a check, KFC, damn it.
You know, I heard you talking about, you know, I'll be honest, I like KFC once in a while, you know. I like KFC. I don't really do fast food too much, but when I do
I get to worrying because I can't tell you the number of times that I've ordered KFC, and I like original recipe, okay? I just do.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite piece is the drumstick. Just because, you know, it's convenient. It comes with its own handle.
It's got a handle. It's got a meat on it.
Right, yeah. So I can't tell you the number of times that I've picked up my drumstick only to find out that poor chicken had a broken goddamn leg.
I hate that.
And I'm like, I wonder if this is pre- or post-mortem broken leg. Because, I mean, it's pretty straight-up compound fracture.
Wow. Yeah, that's not good.
Yet once again, there is a concerted effort by the massive food corporations of America to turn me into a damn vegan, and we're getting pretty close to it. I'm getting pretty vegetarian, and I got to tell you, Todd, I don't like it.
It's rough, isn't it?
I'm not all straight razor vegan or whatever they call themselves. But I ain't eating a hell of a lot of meat. I'm doing a whole lot of yogurt. A lot of soup. Not much meat in that.
Right.
That kind of...
If you can get yourself a tub of miso, you'd be doing yourself a big favor.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can... Not a lot of chance of that. I mean, you're in South Carolina, Stan, and you got more choice than I got.
It's hard. But yeah, you have to work for it. You have to. I just found a new Asian market. But I understand what you're saying. Believe me, I've been places like when you described. No, we're just a couple of stores away from being a food desert. I mean, I have to drive 70 miles to get what I have to get. Round trip, you know. But,
I mean, I got a Kroger's within a 30-mile round trip of me. But I'm eating a lot of hummus.
Right.
But I found out because, you know, we like our Kroger stuff, right?
Right.
I
love it.
The Kroger Simply brand, non-GMO, cruelty-free, free-range, vegan hummus is really damn good. It's better than the Sabra and all those other brands. It's yummy, but it's pricey. But I've been going through a lot of toaster naan with a lot of hummus.
once you start liking hummus, it's amazing. It goes and it fills you up. I mean, when some people just don't like it, but I've always liked it. I make my own now. I rarely buy it anymore because I've been making it for years. And I think one of the secrets is getting one of those immersion blenders, like a wand.
Yeah.
That's all you need. And you don't have to use tahini paste. You can use peanut butter instead. But yeah, but it's good hummus. And, you know, when you're driving, it's an excellent food on the road because it gives you energy. It's a lot of protein. It's not messy, really. You can't be good.
And that's my goal right now to try to keep the protein going. So hummus, beans,
right.
Things that can get through there fairly benignly.
Morningstar has a really good black bean burger. It's a vegan patty. You know, it's supposed to be like a hamburger. It's very tasty. They're not cheap. They're not dirt cheap. But, you know, people can learn to make that stuff. But the best, I'm telling you, when you make your own hummus, oh, my God, the money I save, you know, when I have company and we have parties and stuff, I can crank it out.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't take a lot of work. A little lemon juice, like a little garlic.
Those sweet roasted red peppers. Mm.
Oh yeah, if you want to tinker with it, that's like I've seen edamame hummus.
Mm-hmm.
Not terrible. We're getting a question from Labor Man in the chat room. What the is hummus? It's a paste made traditionally of chickpeas and some garlic and some lemon juice and some sesame paste, and you eat it with warm flatbread.
Yep.
And it's tasty.
And you
know
what you were saying?
I just can't eat a steady diet.
I found that in the past 2 years. Yeah, just in the past 2 years, because I go to Trader Joe's a lot. There's, like you said, edamame. They have there's a horseradish hummus. And
oh, now that would be interesting.
Oh, it's delicious. Oh my God! You know, Trader Joe's is great. So, but I had this recipe because I like lima beans. I like vegetables. Period. But there's a brand called Margaret Holmes. And they have canned vegetables. Okay. So there's a recipe for hummus on the side of the butter bean can. And it works, buddy.
Oh, I'll bet it does, but I wouldn't be fit company for man nor beast for about a week after butter bean hummus. Who are you kidding here?
Well,
the only way you eat butter beans is if everybody's eating butter beans.
Well, everybody's going to eat it because the seasoned butter bean. Yeah, everybody. But you have to cut it. You cut it with the chickpeas. It's not straight butter bean. You cut it with the chickpeas. But you know, I made hummus even with black-eyed peas, and that's tasty also.
Oh yeah, I like the earthiness of a black-eyed pea. There's that, you know, that earthy
taste.
That's
what I'm talking about, Bob. See, Bob knows his flavor frequencies. That's exactly it. It's earthy and meaty. So you got me excited now, man. Now I have to cook up some.
Yeah, see, I've gotten you out of your existential angst.
Well, anyway, yeah, I don't know. I just wish that there was more of an uproar over Steve King. I love to talk about food, but anyway, if you think of food, maybe you'll feel better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm back to that place where I'm having dreams about the hot dogs at that barbecue joint in North Alabama, and it's really, really sad. And the way the dream works out, this is inside Bob's brain night. I mean it's a recurring dream, yeah, at least once a week, and I'm down there, and usually Mom and Dad are still alive. And we're hanging out, and I look up, and I go, you know, I've been here for a week, and I haven't gone for a hot dog. And I get in the car, and I go to, and I never get to the barbecue joint, because I wake up, and I'm all excited, because I'm going to have the hot dog, and then it ain't there.
You're kidding.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean,
if
I don't get down there pretty soon.
Now, what does the hot dog that you never get your hands on, what does it have on it?
It's the simplest thing in the world. I've talked about it before.
There's a little barbecue joint on the corner of Pine Street and Sherrod Avenue in Florence, Alabama. It's called Dick Howell's Pit Barbecue. They were the second barbecue joint in North Alabama ever.
Wow.
And they do, I mean, they do exquisite barbecue. For the longest time, they only did pulled pork. They've expanded into ribs, and their chicken is just freaking fabulous.
Do they use the mustard base or the tomato base?
It's more like a vinegar base. I mean, it's thin.
Okay.
And it's tart and hot. But the hot dogs, $1 a piece on Tuesdays, by the way.
Damn.
Are the simplest. I mean, the weenies are those really, really red dyed cheap weenies.
Mm-hmm.
And they just split the weenie, they put it in a bun, and they lay in this slaw that they make. And that's all there is to it. And they roll it up, and they put it together, and they press it till it's good and hot inside and out, and they wrap it up, and they with just, you know, it's not even wax paper, it's just that white, you know, it's just that white butcher paper kind of, and they stab it with a toothpick, and I buy them 24 to a sack. I did the last time I was down there. Ferg and I were together, and on the road back, we stopped there one last time, bought a 24 sack of these dogs, immediately knocked down a half a dozen each, and then just kind of rationed them to ourselves the rest of the way up the road to West Virginia. And I think we got through the door with a couple for Margie and Agnes. And the slaw is not slaw. I mean, it's not like mayonnaise-y stuff. It's mustard-based. And it is spicy as hell. And sweet. And tangy. And that's all that's on that dog.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
Well, I think I might be able to get over to Kroger this week because they have what they call day-old bread, and there's nothing wrong with the spread at all. It was a cart of it. And they have potato bread, hamburger rolls, and hot dog buns.
Oh, those are nice. Yeah.
You know, and it's that brand that they have, their store brand. I mean, you know, to get the upper scale store brand. What's it? Private selection or something like that.
Yeah, private selection. Right, right.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to look at positive things where they are. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Without a doubt.
But, I had a good friend that came down to see me a few weeks ago, and I don't think she'd ever been to Kroger. But we went there. We got a lot of good food like that, you know. But you know, even it's simple things sometimes. Because we need our energy. We have to eat well to fight these evil people. They're just out of control now. I don't understand.
And you know, this is also part of reminding ourselves that we can still be happy.
Right.
And we kind of got to.
Because how many days is it already? It's only...
What are we, 54, 55 days? I mean, let's see, 20th to the 20th, that's 28 days, 30 days. I'm not going to sit and count. It's too many. It's too many. And...
But we're not...
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, and you know, the people are still out there, and God love them for the optimists they are who think that, you know, well, you know, the Republicans are going to wake up one of these mornings and they're going to impeach him. And I'm like, I mean, with one person, I got a $5 bet going. My $5 says he makes it to the end of his term, notwithstanding natural, you know, natural processes of mortality. In other words, will the Republicans impeach him and remove him from office, or will they 25th Amendment him? And my bet is no, because there is way too much that this is the opportunity of a political lifetime. And it doesn't matter.
You see it in Paul Ryan's eyes, don't you? I mean, he cannot stand it.
The Trump administration was told to put up or shut up with their Barack Obama wiretapped my phones claim, and the due date was yesterday.
They blew that off.
And because there is no evidence, he just straight up lied. And there's not a Republican out there that will say, you know, I'm sorry, I know it's my party and everything, but the President of the United States is a bald-faced liar who would rather climb a tree and lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth. That animal does not exist, Todd. Just don't.
Bob, I don't know. That's one possibility. See, I have another theory. That could be true. The other part, we had to remember, he does have access to briefings. And remember, it's probably like a search warrant where it will just say the address. It doesn't say people's names unless it's specific. But we're talking about telecommunications, you know, surveillance.
Well, yeah, but he had the power to unseal any classified document and provide it. And he did not. That evidence does not exist.
Well, he can't. You can't do that because of the way it was obtained.
No, but he, as the president, is the one person on Earth who can declassify information.
Yeah, but if he starts doing that, if he starts going down that road, see, everything's just all messed up.
Well, the reason he can't is because his entire administration is, to one degree or another, looped in and engaged in dirty-ass relations with the Russians. Now, I know this pisses off the Sparkle Ponies, but the evidence is overwhelming at this point.
How can it piss somebody off when it's hitting you in the face? All these people, I mean, my God, it's too much. It's too much. I'm concerned, and I don't know. I'm concerned. I think I voiced this last time I talked to you, because we are actually now, this is just not funny. We are looking weak. There are people who do want to do us harm. And they better get their shit together very quickly. They have total control. They have every branch of government right now. And no, what legislation has gone through? All we've seen is executive orders. Where's the legislation? Am I missing something?
No.
So these motherfuckers are just full of shit.
There are going to be Trump-branded massage parlors in Asia, okay?
Legislated. Oh, but that was by the Chinese, not by us. That's right.
Well, they had to. The Trump organization had to apply for them.
I don't know. I still maintain my 3 months. I bet a dollar. I say 3 months. So he's almost 60 days in. So another month. It's just too much. This thing's going to collapse. And just the last thing I have to say, and I don't see why more people are not up in arms about this, is the lack of hiring on the federal level. I mean, this is going to be serious.
Now, are you talking about the vacancies in office that he hasn't even bothered to try to fill?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's part of deconstructing the administrative state. If you render the government incapable of functioning, then people will say, well, government don't work. I mean, Rexxon Tillerson just took off for an Asian summit, but he did it on the down low, and for the first time in eons, no press were allowed to travel with him.
Yeah, I didn't like that too much.
It doesn't exactly inspire confidence in transparent governance.
I, I mean, it's just too much. These folks are stealing as much as they can, as fast as they can. They're as crooked as they can be. And no one seems to care. All I can say is, give him a chance. Give Trump a chance. You putting down a white man like that?
No. All we are saying is give Trump a chance.
Somehow it doesn't sound as good as the original.
I bet somebody wants to talk with you, man. But I enjoyed the conversation, and that hot dog, man, it got me hungry now. I don't have any slaw though.
I'll have to send you the recipe. But a road trip is best. I mean, all you'd be doing is shooting across North Georgia and North Alabama. That's all.
I can do that in a few hours. Yeah.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know when you're ready, and I'll tell them I sent. And then you can go in and tell them I sent you.
Going for a 24-pack.
Damn straight on a Tuesday. It's only $24, and it'll get you all the way back to South Kakalaki.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, Todd, you take care.
Bye. You too, man. All right, buddy.
All right, later. The one and only Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Lines are open if you want to jump in. I just had a message. Rachel Maddow, and I have no reason to think that she was joking about this. Rachel Maddow claims to have at least one of Donald Trump's tax returns. This should be interesting. Mm-hmm. Very. All right, let's go check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay, I'm on a different thing.
The audio is a little different, but you're quite intelligible.
Okay. It's one of those, it's like the old handheld telephone receiver, but you can plug it into your device. And I happen to have it handy, so I figured I'd try it to see how it sounded.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like old school on a new phone. Weird, you know? Of course, now if you're using it while you're out and about, if you're on the bus or something, you can make your phone ring and hand it over to the person next to you and tell them, here, it's for you. You know, let them make of it what they will. But this will be a short call, but since you're doing food porn, I keep meaning to share this little recipe with you. And it's too early in the season for you. It's got to be like summertime weather or intense spring weather. But it's a cold pasta salad, which I kind of whipped up by trial and error. The basic ingredients are that you've probably seen the rainbow spiral tricolored pasta.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You fix up some of that and then drain it and let it cool. Okay. And then you take a couple of boneless chicken breasts and cook those up, you know, let them cool, and then dice those up real nice. And then in a big dish, you take a standard-sized can of garbanzo beans or chickpeas, whatever you call them. Drain those, rinse them, you know, as you would normally do. Mash them up real good in the bowl. And then to that, you add a little can of chopped black olives, one of those little teeny tiny cans.
Oh, yeah. Okay? The minced, not the sliced.
Yeah. Then you put in the diced up chicken. And you can choose for yourself what sort of wetting agent you want in terms of something to hold it together. Some people use a combination of mayonnaise with a dollop of sour cream. My personal way to do it is to take a little bit of ranch dressing, a little bit of Caesar dressing, and a little bit of Italian dressing, and wet down the pasta.
Yeah, see, I could see going with some Newman's Own Caesar. That's really good Caesar.
Oh, yeah, something like that would be great. But anyway, mix it all together. Get it as wet as you need for it to be. Cover it. Put it in the fridge for an hour or so. Let it get nice and chilled.
Scott?
Yeah.
There you are. Okay.
Okay. But anyway, it's a nice little summertime treat when you don't want to, you know, spend time over the stove and you want something cool and refreshing.
That's nice. I love a good chilled pasta salad. I really, really
yeah.
do.
Yeah. And I left out the, you know, the amounts. You can kind of wing that, you know, to play that
oh, yeah.
by ear. Another thing, you were talking about those Alabama hot dogs.
Yeah.
When I was living in Cincinnati and in the late 90s doing the afternoon
Oh, no, not on, Gold Star. Oh, please.
No, 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 no. This is nothing like
Not
Gold
Skyline.
Star. No, 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 no.
I can't take Skyline. Cinnamon in my chili.
Okay, well, this is something unique and just a thing of itself and a thing of beauty. And I kind of found the place by accident. Down the street from the station where I worked doing afternoons on this little jazz station was this place called Camp Washington Chili. Okay, you can, I'm sure they have a website. But in Cincinnati, they have a thing called conies. They're basically chili dogs.
Yeah.
But Camp Washington Chili has the best damn chili dogs that I have found. And believe me, like you say, Gold Star and Skyline and all the rest. I've tried all those other ones, but there's something about Camp Washington chili that makes the best damn coney. And you cracked me up when you said you'd buy a big old bag of 24. I wasn't quite that bad because it was just me. But I would stop by there on the way in to do my afternoon shift, and I would get at least half a dozen of those bad boys. And
well, yeah, the 24 was because it was me and Ferg, and we were going to be on the road for 500 miles.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm telling you, if you're ever in Cincinnati, you check out Camp Washington Chili.
Yeah, just as long as you're not sitting here telling me to have chili three-way or any of that foolishness.
No, I don't go in for that.
Several years ago when we were in the Cincinnati airport across the river in Kentucky, which is a lovely airport, by the way, until Delta screwed them and unhubbed them. And now I guess it's just kind of a ghost town.
I didn't know that.
Well, there's a Gold Star chili outfit there.
Yeah.
And just because it's a local thing, I got a chili three-way and sat it on the table there in front of the kids and said, "It's a Cincinnati tradition." And all three of the young'uns got into it. Got one bite in their mouths, about two chews, and this anything but beatific look came over their face, and they said, "What in the name of is this god awful mess?" And I said, "Well, what that god awful mess is a Cincinnati tradition where some Greek immigrant a lot of years ago." Made chili and dumped a bunch of allspice and cinnamon into it and said and told people it was a tradition. And thus our traditions made, and you couldn't give it to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the reputation far exceeds the performance in terms of taste and texture and stuff. I mean, in my opinion, I know some people like it, but I never much cared for it.
Well, just the idea of chili, of some sort of chili across spaghetti noodles. I mean, really?
Yeah, that I never did get that, and I lived out that way for like 5 years. But
people love it. I mean, I got somebody in the chat room right now. Derby saying Skyline is rad.
I know.
I mean, Cincinnati folks just absolutely go over the moon over that stuff. Well, that's the same way with my simple little hot dogs. I mean, after this thing turns into a podcast, I'm being told about Pink's in L.A. and some joint in Ohio, and the New Yorkers will chime in, and then the Chicagoans will get on board.
Oh yeah,
and the Chicagoans are hardcore, you know, and for a reason, because a Vienna beef dog in that wonderful poppy seed bun with those arsenical green sport peppers and the tomato and the cucumber and the mustard. That thing's special.
Yeah. Well, Cincinnati people are about conies the way Kansas City people are about barbecue. There's only like 800,000 barbecue joints in the greater Kansas City area. And, like, I lived there for 10 years back in the 80s. And, I mean, I tried them all over the years, but my favorite, and still is, Arthur Bryant's. And I know it's an acquired taste. There are some people that just don't like the sauce because it's thin and it's spicy and it's probably vinegar-based. But there's just something about it that...
Well, there's two places in Alabama. The one place that I mentioned.
Yeah.
And then the other one is down in Tuscaloosa. Don't go to the... I mean, if you have to, okay. Mobile, Birmingham, Atlanta, whatever. You go to the franchise joint. But the original... The original Dreamland on Jug Factory Road, off of McFarland Boulevard in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They ain't no better ribs, nowhere, no how, no way. Period.
Mm-hmm.
End of sentence. And
well, sometimes joints are the better place to go, especially places that have been there that aren't much to look at, probably in a shady neighborhood. But usually, those are the best places.
Yeah, I mean, I've never let that run me away from anything. No.
Oh no. As a matter of fact, you've almost got to go to a place like that to get the real deal.
And I mean, West Virginia loves its hot dogs, and we don't call it chili. What you put on, we'd call it sauce.
Sauce, yeah.
Only it's not. It's, you know, freaking hot dog chili, and 9 times out of 10, it's got a bunch of sugar in it. Because
yeah,
I think
syrup these days.
Well, I think it goes back to our hillbilly roots when sugar was a precious commodity. And you sugar up stuff just to have the sweet from a time when sweet was not particularly readily available.
Yeah.
Of course, I come from a tradition where you do not sugar the cornbread, because if God had wanted cornbread sweet, he would have called it cake.
Yeah, my mom used to make cornbread, and she'd always put just a boatload of sugar in it, and it just wasn't right. I mean,
no, I want that corn taste. I want the melted butter, and we are driving people crazy, Scott.
Oh, I know. When one more thing, and then I'll go. You're talking about getting kind of vegan in your dining habits. One thing that I've used for years, and I try to have it at least once a month, maybe even twice a month in the cooler months. And I forget the manufacturer. I think it's Hams, H-A-M-S. But it's a 15-bean soup. It's the dried beans, all different varieties. And that little packet of probably sodium-based ham flavor.
Yeah, we call it the flavor boost.
Yeah. Oh, but I love that stuff. Serve that up with hot sourdough bread and real butter. Ooh. Ooh,
yeah,
take you home.
And you know, I can handle that stuff. Apparently, and I'm shedding weight. These dietary changes, I really, really am. I've got a doctor's appointment on the 16th, and I expect to be down another 10 pounds or so.
Yeah, and plus all that fiber helps with the cholesterol, and you know,
one hopes.
That kind of thing. Your innards.
Yeah. One hopes.
But anyway, that's my little food porn for today, and. I guess that's it. Now, I'm sorry about the thing earlier with Punky and his organically grown snow cone, but and the warm temperatures. But I was on the phone for like an hour and a half, maybe a little longer, with Social Security because my 1099 had a funky number on it that just didn't ring true, and it was like an hour on hold, and then the nice lady I talked to, and she sorted it out for me, but. I said, you're not in Baltimore, are you? Because they have a real big office up in Baltimore. She said, no, I'm out west. And I said, well, good for you, because I hear they're up to their ass in snow up there. You know, D.C. and Baltimore and points north. But,
I think the worst of it is going to be the points north part. I had a note from Reverbo earlier today saying, so far, a lot of wind, not a lot of anything else.
Yeah.
It's as you get north of Baltimore and, you know, and that strip up the East Coast and into New York State and you know, the part of Pennsylvania that's not Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, that's Alabama in the middle. And then I Amtrak canceled service between New York and Boston and New York and Albany. if there's any good side to it, it's the fact that it's March and maybe it'll melt away pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, and my for reasons that I've never understood, for something like 30 years or more, my younger sister has lived in Maine. Now, I'm sure it's a lovely place. I'm sure the people are friendly. But good Lord, I mean, summer basically is July and August, and that's if they're lucky. And the rest of the year is a snowy crapshoot.
Well, Boss Man Wayne lived in Vermont for a lot of years, and he said Vermont has two seasons: 10 months of sledding and or 10 months of winter and 2 months of bad sledding.
Yeah, yeah. But man, give me the simple life out here on the West Coast.
Okay, shut it, Scott.
All we got to do is worry about earthquakes.
Yeah, I just want to feel my feet, okay? No, really, shut it. This will be one of those nights when I jump under the covers and Agnes looks at me and says, mm-mm, don't get those feet anywhere near me.
Yeah, and that would also not be the night to have that 16-bean soup, because under the covers is the worst place for later, you know?
Dutch oven soup, exactly.
Yeah,
I'm being told by Randy in PA there's moderate flooding in the streets on the New Jersey and Delaware coasts, but of course there's no climate change.
Oh no, not of course not. All right, man.
All right, you take care.
Okay,
best and best to Punky. Hope the snow cone didn't melt away too fast.
No, he had trouble holding it, but he did his best. He just licked the hell out of that thing.
Oh, very good, very good.
All right.
All right. Take care, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego way, where he's enjoying, you know, some sort of weather bliss that just makes me crazy. Darcy just wrote in and said, food porn. God, you guys are making me hungry. Can't wait for the fried green tomatoes. Cheers. Oh, fried green tomatoes. Yeah, see, I don't have a problem eating a lot of vegetables. It's just I want a little meat once in a while. Just a little meat. We tried a little adventure / experiment on the way down to McDowell County on Sunday. Agnes and I stopped at Tamarack and Beckley and had lunch there. Always get the trout. Oh, that pan-fried trout. Flaky, tender, and not fishy. And I handled it reasonably well. So, you know, maybe there's hope. I don't know. Let's see. Other stuff. Line's open if you want to engage in conversation, of course. But some other stuff to take into account. I don't know if anybody is paying attention to it, but we probably ought to. This is, of course, the four. By the way, thus far, at 8 minutes past the third hour of the program, Charlene remains the only person helping out in fundraising for the program, so we're at $225 down, which tomorrow would mean $425 down. And I would really like for us not to be $425 down if possible. I mean, if we could just knock out the evening's fundraising, what a big thing that would be. So if you'd like to help take that $225 down to $220 or $215 or $200 or what have you, it sure would be much appreciated. So what I was saying is it is, of course, the 14th day of March 2017. Any idea of what happens tomorrow? Anything, Bueller? Well, you can be forgiven if tomorrow doesn't mean much to you, because all of a sudden, now that that one isn't in our White House anymore, the debt ceiling seems to have lost all of its gravitas. Back on March the 8th, Secretary of the Treasury Steve Plug in the Swamp Drain Mnuchin sent a letter to Paul Ryan, You remember Paul Ryan, who was all fired, worried about debts and deficits and everything, back when that one was in our White House. Steve Mnuchin wrote to Paul Ryan and CC'd Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Kevin Brady and Richard Neal and Orrin Hatch and Ron Wyden and all other members of the 115th Congress. Mnuchin wrote, "Dear Mr. Speaker, I write to apprise you of certain upcoming events and actions related to the debt limit. As you know, the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015 suspended the statutory debt limit through Wednesday, March 15, 2017. Beginning on Thursday, March 16, 2017, the outstanding debt of the United States will be at the statutory limit. At that time, Treasury anticipates that it will need to start taking certain extraordinary measures in order to temporarily prevent the United States from defaulting on its obligations. Today, March 8th, Treasury is announcing that it will suspend the sale of state and local government securities. SLGSs are special purpose Treasury securities issued to states and municipalities to assist them in conforming to certain tax rules. These securities count against the debt limit. The suspension of SLGS sales will commence on March 15, 2017, and continue until the debt limit is either raised or suspended. As in the past, it is likely Treasury will utilize additional extraordinary measures. As I said in my confirmation hearing, you know, the part where he wasn't lying about something, honoring the full faith and credit of our outstanding debt is a critical commitment. Not only is it a critical commitment, it's a constitutional requirement, dumbass! I encourage Congress to raise the debt limit at the first opportunity so that we can proceed with our joint priorities. How about that? So, tomorrow, we hit the debt ceiling. Now, you might recall that back on the 6th day of July, 2011, Donald J. Trump, then not even candidate Trump, said, "Congress is back. Time to cut cap and balance. There's no revenue problem. The debt limit cannot be raised until Obama spending is contained." And then he said, after Barack Obama called for raising the debt limit, he said, "He's destroying our country. Barack Obama has requested to raise our debt limit over $16.4 trillion by the end of blah, blah, blah," and he kept tweeting. And later on, when he was on the campaign trail, he said, "I'm going to be very, very strong on the debt limit. And before there's any increase in the debt limit, as president, I'll insist on a very big pound of flesh, a big pound of flesh." Hey, Donnie, dumbass, which weighs more, a pound of flesh or a pound of feathers? Huh? It's a big pound, a very big pound, a big, beautiful pound. So here we are, debt limit. And guess what? No, Donnie Dumbass is not in any wise interested in that big, beautiful pound of flesh anymore. Mm-hmm. But we just need to raise it because the black guy's not in the White House anymore. Hypocrisy much? Nah, not much at all. Heck. We just don't have to worry about that anymore. Because the spendthrift Negro isn't going to bankrupt us. Because he's not able to give away free stuff like Obama phones and free Cadillacs and all those things he was giving away free to, and free houses and stuff. I feel so much better, don't you? Might want to pay attention to that, though. See how quick it is that the Congress rolls over and says, spend all you want, Donnie. We'll just keep raising that there debt ceiling. Because why not? Oh, let's see. Note coming in from Larry. Pretty soon you'll be a vegetarian and you'll be hosting a huge show out of Portland, Oregon by the end of the decade. Remember I said that. Some way that we have no clue about right now will ensure that this happens. Well, you know, if Patterson Hood from Northwest Alabama can move to Portland, Oregon, maybe they'll welcome a hillbilly too. I don't know. Nah, I don't see that happening. But stranger things have happened. Thanks very kindly to Ralphs for jumping in. Ralphs has a $25 challenge. If another 25 follows it, Ralphs will kick in another 25 behind it. And that'll go a long way toward taking a chunk out of tonight's fundraising deficit. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Darcy, for helping out. We might just take a bite out of this and not have such a horrible deficit after all. Oh, hey. Vegetarian hosting a huge progressive radio show out of Portland. I'm sorry, I still think that. Hey, honey, you want to go to Portland, Oregon?
Sure.
Okay, we got a yay vote from Agnes. Remember back during the campaign? When all the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade would say things like, but what about her emails? And Goldman Sachs speeches. As if the other side was some sort of paragon of virtue. As if there was more than one choice on the ballot, you know, him or her.
Jill can win.
Well, now it turns out, I mentioned Rexon Tillerson and his double secret probation trip to Asia a few minutes ago. Well, Rexon has a little problem. Between 2008 and 2015... according to the office of New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, in papers that they filed in court yesterday, as part of a joint investigation with the Attorney General of Massachusetts. As to whether Exxon defrauded the public by engaging in a campaign of climate change disinformation in order to make sure that the value of their oil and gas reserves remained high. Well, they found out that between 2008 and 2015, Rexon Tillerson used a phony baloney alias email account to talk about climate change. Mm-hmm. Along the way, Exxon didn't bother to tell anybody whose email account it belonged to. And even though New York State has subpoenaed the living bejesus out of Exxon, Exxon still hasn't turned over thousands of documents that have been subpoenaed. Yeah. You're going to love this. Rexon Tillerson operated an email account called Wayne Tracker. My God, that sounds all up by the bootstraps, free market patriotism, lone wolf. Oh, that just sounds. If it didn't work out at Exxon, by God, Wayne Tracker could have had a career in right-wing talk radio or country music. Coming up next, the chart-topping hit from Wayne Tracker. Our climate ain't changing, and I ain't neither. Now, the funny part is that Exxon said, well, you know, I mean, in an article at Bloomberg, Alan Jeffers, who is a spokes creep for Exxon, said that we only created that for Rexon when his general inbox done become overloaded.
Really?
I mean, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I got a lot of old emails. And you know what? $1.99 a month, and they all stay right where they are with the Google. BobKincaid@gmail.com. It's not nothing secret about it. And a corporation the size of Exxon can't just dedicate a little more mail server space to the real email account of Rexon Tillerson and instead creates Wayne Tracker, who, Scott and Punky note, sounds like Dirk Diggler. Sounds like a porn name. Oh, I don't know. He sounds kind of like a grizzly bear hunter, guide service in Alaska. And Wayne Tracker will help you find that big grizzly. Wayne Tracker. Nah, it didn't have anything to do with him wanting an alias so he could go online and be a goddamn troll about how climate change ain't real. And what about the fucking sunspots, really? And you know, there's millions of people out there still smoke cigarettes. They gotta be contributing to climate change. By the way, for those of you who watched the town hall, did that part make the program? The line about cigarette smoking contributing to climate change? I haven't had a chance to watch. I was kind of there, so it would be kind of a rerun to me. But if you watched, was that still there? Yeah. According to Eric Schneiderman's office in Albany, Exxon failed to disclose who the email account belonged to. Exxon failed to produce thousands of documents. And moreover, it's a little bit of a problem because corporations aren't allowed to dummy up the books in order to make their numbers look better than they are. Greenpeace's lead on the Climate Liability Project, Naomi Ages, said, "This is a significant development in Schneiderman's investigation into what Exxon knew about climate change, when he knew it, and what the company did to conceal it. Was Rexon Tillerson, was Rexon Tillerson that worried about climate risks for Exxon, or was he more worried about the risk of revealing them to his shareholders and to the public, or was it both?" I'll take both for $1,000, Alex. The suit continues slowly because Exxon can grind a piece of litigation to a halt. Hey, thank you very kindly to Frank. Frank answered Ralph's challenge and doubled down on it then, or tripled down on it. So let's see. So we got about $55 in fundraising to go for the evening. Thank you, Frank. Thank you very kindly. That's most helpful indeed. Thank you, Keith. Keith says the bit about smokers causing global warming was in there. It was in there and a good bit more. Gotta have coal! Back to the food porn for a moment, courtesy of Arnold up in PA. Best pulled pork sandwich ever. Some random bar in Chicago. Wish I could remember the name. Thanks for the help, Arnold! But a reminder for those of you in the Balmer area, if you go north on the highway toward York, Pennsylvania, the last exit before you hit Pennsylvania, you take that exit, you wind around, sort of a semi-clover leaf, you come to the road, you turn right, you go to the next intersection, it's a T, you turn right again. On the right, there is a block building gas station. It doesn't look like much of nothing. And inside there, they make the best creamy crab soup on earth. And the crab cakes, well, you just want a suit made out of them. That's what you want. They're that good. So, what else? You remember when? You remember that over the course of the last several months, I've pointed out that I'm pretty sure that Donald Trump is freaking broke. Or as broke as a dude like that can be. Yeah. Well, back during the campaign, he said, I'm very wealthy, and I'll turn down my salary as president. Then after he was elected, he said, no, I'm not going to take the salary. I'm not taking it. He claimed that he'd only take $1 a year. Well, guess what? We're paying him. And guess what he's not doing? Giving it back. Guess what he is doing? Cashing the check. Because, see, this is one of those things that the rubes bought into. Because the Constitution requires that the president actually be paid a salary. And consequently, also as a function of the Constitution, you can't change the president's salary either more or less for that president while that president is in office. As Think Progress points out, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and I've been wondering about her, is she kinfolk to, former governor, reverend, brother, pastor, minister, diabetes snake oil salesman Mac Huckabee? I don't know. I don't know. They've been trying to trot out a weird. It's been kind of like an audition process. I mean, you had Stephen Miller. You got Kellyanne Conway talking about microwaves. You got Sean Spicer out there threatening to go out behind the dumpster with any member of the White House press corps. And then you got Sarah Huckabee. Mm-hmm. Well, she was interviewed by PolitiFact after he promised not to take his salary. This probably generated a pants on fire. And she said, he is required to get a paycheck, but we'll be giving it back to the Treasury or donating. Of course, he's claimed to make donations in the past and never did. And no documentation's ever been provided. And then called on it by professional liar Sean Spicer responded, well, he's saving it all up and he's going to donate it at the end of the year. Yeah, that's what he's going to do. Yeah, call me when he donates it. And this is in line with past mendacious conduct, because it was in 2004 when he sat down for another interview with Howard Stern and said the entire seven-figure salary he earned from charity, he earned from The Apprentice, he would donate to charity. Lots of charities, AIDS Research, Police Athletic League, lots of different charities. And then 3 months later, no, I'm not. I'm definitely not donating the whole salary. No, definitely not. And he's still taking a salary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the same year that he only gave $700,000 to his own foundation. And then his foundation turned around and used the money to do things like buy heroic 6-foot-tall portraits of him. Yeah. But I guess we can and should point out the fact that the man is a liar. He lies. Lying is what he does. The problem lies in normalizing the lies. And if you want an example of something really obnoxious in terms of normalizing, there was Mika Brzezinski today saying, Mr. President, did you lie? Did you lie? Well, you know, y'all helped elect him. So it's a little late to be wondering now, isn't it? Yeah. Then there was the meeting today with His Royal Noble Serene High Graciousness, the Crown Prince to the throne of the Royal House of Ibn Saud. Mike Pence was there. Comrade Kumquat was there. And there was a photo opportunity for just a few minutes. They let the press in to take pictures of Comrade Kumquat and His Royal Majestic Noble Serene Graciousness, the Crown Prince of the Royal House of Ibn Saud, our partners in peace. You know, the good headloppers. This is what ensued.
Very nice people.
We hope so.
This way, please. I said thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
I said thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very nice people. Yeah, we hope so. Or I will have their heads cut off. You know, we do that in my country. We cut off journalists' heads. It helps to keep them in line. And the little smart-ass grin on his face as he said, very nice people. Yeah. Oh, dear God, I was afraid of that. Thank you. Thank you to the research department in Madison. Thank you, Michael. See, I didn't know pastor, brother, governor, minister, former presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil salesman, Mike Hoekstra. I didn't really know that he had a daughter. I only ever heard about the son, you know, the one that tortured the dog to death. Principal Deputy White House Secretary. Graduate of Wachita Baptist University of Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Further proof that the swamp has not been drained, and that, in fact, it is inhabited by, oh, what did Jesus call them? A generation of vipers. I said, thank you. I don't know if that was Sarah Huckabee. Well, it kind of makes sense. Pretty sure she didn't marry one of Bernie's kids. That's not why she's Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Not by a long shot. And I gotta admit, I'm kind of curious, kind of intrigued. 22 minutes or so, and then I'm sure they'll tease it throughout the program. Rachel Maddow says we've got his, Trump's 2005 1040 details to come. You got it. I'm curious. I'll be watching. Of course, there's not that. There's the question of. That's his personal 1040, so we'll, and it's 2005, so it's 12 years old. Probably just further, further proof that the guy's a deadbeat. Because ever so many of our wealth class are. And what else as we round out the evening? We are down to $45. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very kindly. $45 to go in fundraising for the evening. And thank you, Herman. Also, yep. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is Mike Huckabee's daughter. hope this has been helpful. Well, it is and it isn't. It's just, you know, another cause for another nightmare. Another one of those great moments in the Goddess of Irony or Synchronicity or something. You might recall the bumper from earlier this evening was Public Image Limited's rise because of the reference to John of Leiden, and then John Leiden, Johnny Rotten. Yeah. Michael says, so we legit both picked the same John Leiden song out of many based merely on undertones? Yes. Damn, that's cool. I mean, that's the way the magic works on the horn. And yeah, says Michael, Public Image Limited is greater than Pistols, obviously not in terms of cultural impact, but in terms of listenability. That's where I am. And going back to yesterday, because Michael pays attention. Thank you, Michael. For the record, Somebody's Baby was perfect yesterday, an obvious choice in retrospect, but it hadn't occurred to me. I guess the else, as in somebody else's babies, just threw me off the scent. Yeah, it's what happens when there's a million songs playing through your head 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to, after I check out what Rachel's got to say at 9 or whenever, after that I may actually plug up the headphones and just listen to some Public Image. It's been a while. And Rise was a nice reminder. You know, you can get kind of in a rut, or you forget things that you loved, or I mean, we're on such an information overload. I also need to check out Dmitri Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony. That just popped into my head. Well, you know, it's not just the United States that does stupid things. And it's always good to have a reminder that other countries are capable of the stupid, too. And usually it comes in the form of authoritarian stupid, fascist or proto-fascist stupid. Who doesn't love Winnie the Pooh? A.A. Milne's son did not love Winnie the Pooh. A.A. Milne's son came to deeply resent, if I understand the history correctly, came to deeply resent Winnie the Pooh. Because A.A. Milne would throw stuffed animals at his kid and say, play with them, and sit there and start making notes. Or so I've read. Internet's full of stuff like that. But, I mean, Little Piglet, and especially the quintessential Disney animated versions with the narration by Sebastian Cabot, who would go on to regale us with renditions of Bob Dylan poetry. Who killed Davy Moore and why and what's the reason for? No, I won't do that to you. You know who doesn't like Winnie the Pooh? The Chinese Communist Party, which has about as much to do with communism as a hog does with a silver service. The Chinese Communist Party has declared Winnie the Pooh persona non grata in the People's Republic. Because Winnie the Pooh is guilty of subversive ideology in the books. James and the Giant Peach and Peppa the Pig are also right out as running dogs of capitalist stooges, whatever. No kidding. Carol said, yeah, you got to watch Rachel. She's got 45 tax returns. She may even pull them out of a microwave oven or something. She really has them from 2005. No, but Daobao, I'm guessing, the online shopping equivalent to Amazon, said last Friday it's going to ban the number of foreign children's books not licensed by its government. Because the Chinese government is worried about Chinese culture being influenced by a bear with an umbrella walking back and forth saying, "Tut, tut, it looks like rain." This is obviously running dog capitalist code for undermining the dictatorship of the proletariat. South China Morning Post was a source for the story, and a publishing official who spoke on the condition of anonymity so as not to be thrown out of a tall building or something, or have their organs harvested or God knows what, said that picture books for children's picture books from South Korea and Japan had little chance of publication, while permission for books to be published from other countries would be limited. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing maybe red eggs and no ham. Mao in socks. Where the wild Joe in lies are. I don't know. It's described as an attempt to make people conform to Communist Party dogma. According to The Guardian, another anonymous source said, Communist Party officials had complained that foreign storybooks had caused an intolerable inflow of ideology from the West. The government has deliberately decided to constrain imported books and protect those written by Chinese authors. Now, before we giggle too much, before we smirk knowingly to ourselves, may I please direct you to an early action of the Congress of the United States in the early decades of the 19th century when they passed a law banning the importation of any and all foreign books. English, French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Swedish, Lithuanian, German, Polish, didn't matter. Because the Congress said that it would, that such books would pollute the minds of the Americans who read them. Yeah, see, that's, once again, and somehow or another, it always seems like we do this. We find ourselves coming full circle at the end of the program. The first hour, we had Steve King and the Western civilization that he wants to revitalize. And lo and behold, here we are. It starts out with a story of Winnie the Pooh being banned in China, only for history to jump out there and remind us that we've had our own little book banning problems. And then, of course, pick any number of books. Let's start with Huck Finn, that can barely be mentioned without somebody somewhere trying to ban it for any number of reasons. Or how about William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch? Or how about Allen Ginsberg's Howl? Or somewhere out on the high plains, I can't remember which state, perhaps Kansas? My personal hero, Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, or The Children's Crusade. Mm-hmm. In point of fact, Kurt Vonnegut wrote a letter when he found out his book was being banned. He didn't take kindly to it. Drake High School, North Dakota. A 26-year-old English teacher there named Bruce Severy wanted to use Slaughterhouse-Five as a teaching aid. In a month's time, the school board head had demanded that all 32 copies be burned in the school's furnace because of obscene language. Because, of course, among other things, there was a character in that book named Montana Wild Hack. By November 16th, word had reached Kurt Vonnegut, and he wrote to Mr. McCarthy. Goddess of Irony was working overtime that day. And said, I'm writing to you in your capacity as chairman of the Drake School Board. I'm among those American writers whose books have been destroyed in the now famous furnace of your school. Certain members of your community have suggested that my work is evil. This is extraordinarily insulting to me. The news from Drake indicates to me that books and writers are very unreal people to you. I am writing this letter to let you know how real I am. I want you to know, too, that my publisher and I have done absolutely nothing to exploit the disgusting news from Drake. We're not clapping each other on the back, crowing about all the books we'll sell because of the news. We've declined to go on television, have written no fiery letters to editorial pages, have granted no lengthy interviews. We're angered and sickened and saddened. And no copies of this letter have been sent to anybody else. You now hold the only copy in your hands. It is a strictly private letter from me to the people of Drake, who have done so much to damage my reputation in the eyes of their children and then in the eyes of the world. Do you have the courage and ordinary decency to show this letter to the people, or will it, too, be consigned to the fires of your furnace? I gather from what I read in the papers and hear on television that you imagine me and some other writers, too, as being sort of rat-like people who enjoy making money from poisoning the minds of young people. I am, in fact, a large, strong person, 51 years old, who did a lot of farm work as a boy, who is good with tools. I've raised 6 children, 3 my own and 3 adopted. They've all turned out well. 2 of them are farmers. I'm a combat infantry veteran from World War II and hold a Purple Heart. I've earned whatever I own by hard work. I've never been arrested or sued for anything. I'm so much trusted with young people and by young people that I've served on the faculties of the University of Iowa, Harvard, and the City College of New York. Every year I receive at least 12 invitations to be commencement speaker at colleges and high schools. My books are probably more widely used in schools than those of any other living American fiction writer. If you were to bother to read my books, to behave as educated persons would, you would learn that they are not sexy, do not argue in favor of wildness of any kind. They beg that people be kinder and more responsible than they often are. It is true that some of the characters speak coarsely. That is because people speak coarsely in real life. Especially soldiers and hard-working men speak coarsely, and even our most sheltered children know that. And we all know, too, that those words really don't damage children much. They didn't damage us when we were young. It was evil deeds and lying that hurt us. After I've said all this, I'm sure you're still ready to respond in effect, yes, yes, but it still remains our right and our responsibility to decide what books our children are going to be made to read in our community. This is surely so. But it's also true that if you exercise that right and fulfill that responsibility in an ignorant, harsh, un-American manner, then people are entitled to call you bad citizens and fools. Even your own children are entitled to call you that. I read in the newspaper that your community is mystified by the outcry from all over the country about what you've done. Well, you've discovered that Drake is a part of American civilization. There's that word again. And your fellow Americans can't stand it that you have behaved in such an uncivilized way. Perhaps you will learn from this that books are sacred to free men for very good reasons, and that wars have been fought against nations which hate books and burn them. If you're an American, you must allow all ideas to circulate freely in your community, not merely your own. If you and your board are now determined to show that you have wisdom and maturity when you exercise your powers over the education of your young, then you should acknowledge that it was a rotten lesson you taught young people in a free society when you denounced and then burned books you hadn't even read. You should also resolve to expose your children to all sorts of opinions and information, in order that they will be better equipped to make decisions and to survive. Again, you've insulted me, and I'm a good citizen. And I'm very real. Kurt Vonnegut. Worst part of that? It fell on deaf ears. And a whole bunch of Superintendent McCarthy's roam the land and elect people like Donald Trump. In China, Steve writes, going on record, can't stand Pooh, also Mickey Mouse, screw them all. That depressed donkey's all right, though. Thanks for noticing me. Yeah, I know. Who doesn't love Eeyore? He's more real than the others. And I accept Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and the Warner Brothers crew from, yeah, Mickey Mouse and Pluto. They never did much for me either. Ron and Raleigh says, how about multiple states trying to ban Howard Zinn's The People's History of America? Yeah, there's that, too. Yeah, we don't have a lot of high horse to stand on if we care to bitch about, look, those funny Chinese banning Winnie the Pooh and James and the Giant Peach. Keith with a note says, Bob, the right wing's always harping on abortion. The phrase that I've heard is love the fetus, hate the child. That's exactly what they're doing. When they take away Medicaid, children will die. Steve King's comment fits right in with that phrase. He only wants white children born in this country. To hell with all the others. These assholes don't care about anybody or anything but themselves. Always have, always will. When does the madness end? I don't know, Keith, because frankly, I'm still waiting for us to have that Star Trek evolutionary moment. Doesn't seem to be anywhere in sight for the time being. Alma wants to know if I appeared even briefly in the town hall there in Welch. I was told that I did. Aisle seat, third row up on the right. You'll probably see my little bald patch. So, hope that helps, Alma. Alma recommends La Brea Honey Sunflower Bread from Smith's Kroger. I don't think I've ever seen that here. I can't consume a lot of green tea because I'm sensitive to caffeine. But thanks just the same. Also had a recommendation for Barilla, don't know, Pasta Plus with protein. I like that stuff. I do. Just slowly moving into trying to eat food again and trying not to have a nasty-ass setback. So that's the end of the program. We will close out with only $45 to go, so we'll start the program at $245 tomorrow. Maybe, maybe it'll only be $200 because of our subscribers. One never knows. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed for helping us knock out fundraising this evening and keeping us out of a big, deep, dark hole come tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going, one and all. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW. .net. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. I'm sure we're going to have some good, righteous, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical fun. Hope you'll be here. I will be. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.